We are live. It is Jim Rome Show. And I'm broadcasting from the Quicken Loan Studios. You want to apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Telephone number is toll-free nationwide and in Canada. Use it, 1-800-636-8686. We start hour number two, as promised, by having a conversation with the head basketball coach at Gonzaga. 20th season in charge, winningest active coach by percentage. He has led the Zags to 19 straight NCAA appearances, a Final Four, two Elite Eights, eight Sweet 16s, led Gonzaga to the Maui Invitational title this season. Gonzaga is 8-0. They're top-ranked in both polls. They're at home against Washington tomorrow. We are joined by Mark Few. Mark, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jim?
Mark, I am super. And I'm looking at your situation. You beat Creighton on Saturday. You are undefeated. You are number one. There's an awful lot to like about your roster. So first things first, Mark, how is life for you right now?
Life is really, really good. Really good on a professional level and probably even better on a personal level. Kids are doing great. Marcy's doing great. So no complaints. But you know what? We're waiting anxiously for the Rome Christmas card to make its way up here. That's kind of a highlight.
That's awesome. That's great. You know, I touched base. Thanks for saying so, Mark. I touched base with Janet. I said, "How hard are you going this year? Are you all in on this? Are you going to bling this thing up?"
Usually is.
She's had a busy year. I don't know. The bar is pretty high, but I'm going to pass that along to her. She'll love hearing that, and I appreciate you saying it. Listen, there's so many guys I want to talk to you about, but let me start with Rui Hachimura. 22 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists in that win over Creighton. He has been an absolute force for you this year, but take me back to his freshman season. You had a really good team that year. He averaged less than 5 minutes per game. His English was not where it is right now. What do you remember about that year for him?
A lot of that, just trying to adapt and just being thrown in to a very, very competitive, high-level world of college basketball. I think there was just so much that he needed to adjust to that obviously first and foremost was just the English, barrier he needed to get over. And if you talk to a lot of people, that's a hard adjustment, the Japanese to English or English to Japanese. For those of us who traveled to Japan, it's a tough one. It's not like going to, to Europe. And we've had a lot of kids from Europe that have came in and jumped right in right away. So not only that, but I think just the intensity of college basketball. And as I tell a lot of these pro scouts that, come in and out, this kid he needs to be judged probably more like an 18-year-old in that he didn't play hundreds of games of AAU basketball since the time he was 12. That opportunity doesn't present itself over there. So he's just now, getting games under his belt and practices under his belt. He's really, really done a great job of, accruing all that knowledge that comes with playing, and now we're getting to see that.
We're talking to Mark Few. Mark, one more thing about that. You were telling SI, Sports Illustrated, that early on he was taking in maybe 10% of what you were saying. How in the world do you go about coaching and developing a player in a situation like that where the language barrier is so great?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Jim, is it's totally unfair than to throw him out, in front of 80,000 people and, 50 million people watching at a Final Four and expect him to, to be able to do some things or in a high level game to even get to a Final Four. So, there was a lot of, development and growth behind the scenes just with, him understanding me and our staff with just, the terminology, the crazy basketball terminology that we all, use, as well as just kind of challenging him to, competitively raise his game. A lot of the cool thing about the Japanese culture is just how much they respect other people, how much they respect people in authority and all that, and trying to get him to you know, it's okay to, you know, you don't have to defer to the older guys all the time. You're a talented guy and you need to start asserting yourself. And he's really kind of coming into his own in that regard.
Gonzaga head coach Mark Few is joining us once again. So, Mark, going into that Duke game, they were number one in the country, loaded with lottery picks. You know nobody's going to give you a national title for a win in November, but how big was that win, and what did your team show you and how they handled that moment?
Well, we played the game, and you know, so anytime you're competing and keeping score, you might as well win. I think that's how we approached it, and you know, we were glad to, you know, to be able to get it done. It was a great test. They're a uber talented team. What I learned about my team is that they're confident, they're talented in their own way. You know, we were able to play a high possession game like that. We didn't really have to adjust our tempo in regards to, hey, we better slow this thing down because these guys are really dangerous. You know, we attacked them in the normal way. The funny thing, Jim, is like, I think we got done playing Arizona at, you know, 8 o'clock at night, maybe over there, Hawaii time. And then, we left to go play Duke at 10 the next morning. So there wasn't a ton of, you know, coaching there was mental stuff going on, but we didn't even have time for a walkthrough or a practice. So, the guys, it was all about their approach and all about just kind of us just playing the Gonzaga way, and ended up turning out pretty good for us.
Mark, what about that? The Gonzaga way, for those who have not watched you this year, well, recently, the Gonzaga way, how would you define that? When you're looking for a Gonzaga player to play a Gonzaga way, how would you describe that?
Just somebody that's going to not have any fear of any moment or any situation. He's going to go out there and obviously put the team first. I mean, the one thing we're doing, we have some really talented special players, but they're not getting caught up in their own numbers. We're sharing the ball at a great rate right now. We're taking great care of the ball. And then again, as the program's kind of made that next step up to the, you know, the real nationally elite level, is we're really playing some good defense, and I think that's a big key. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done against teams as talented as Duke and such, and even Creighton the other day is a really, really gifted offensive team. But, you know, we're finding our ways to get those important stops down the stretch or in the crux of the game.
And not only that, Zach Norvell Jr. said that after the game, quote, experience plays a big role in this. We came down the stretch. We got some stops. We knew we were winning it on the defensive end. I know you got to love hearing that from a guy with that experience. You know, you mentioned the national level, Mark. I mean, I read an abbreviated list of your accomplishments at the top of the interview. If I read all of them, we wouldn't have had time. When you first took over and you were developing that program, did you think that you would get to a point where you'd beat the number one team in the country and, I mean, a supposedly unbeatable Duke team, and that it wouldn't be that shocking, that it would be almost expected?
No, not when I first took over. I mean, and, you know, you've been here. You've been there the whole time kind of with us and seen this rise. You know, and I still kind of approach it like that. We're just trying to get better the next day, and it was like that back then. I think the biggest thing when we made our initial run to that Elite Eight with Dan Munson back in 99 was we just did not want to be a one-hit wonder, and we wanted to continue to grow this thing. And we've done that. I mean, the administration's been great. I've had the same athletic director the whole time. And the program has grown every single year and continues to. Now we got a brand-new, sparkling, state-of-the-art practice facility, academic center, and facilities, travel, you know, what we're doing with the team analytically and things like that. It's always changing, and it's always in growth mode. And, you know, now we're to the point that, you know, this last, you know, 5% has been probably the toughest to squeeze out of it. But, we're trying to make it happen.
Gonzaga head coach Mark Few joining us. It's really inspiring when you look at it that way. Now, over the summer, you were one of the coaches who was selected to be a part of the USA basketball minicamp. What was that experience like for you, and what was your takeaway?
It was great. It was beyond great on a couple different fronts. First of all, Coach Popovich is he's an amazing people person with just how he gets with people. He makes them feel special. He makes them feel wanted. And we really had some good talks around long dinners that I'll always, be able to remember for the rest of my life. Just Jerry Colangelo was at those things. And then just, hours and hours getting to spend with, I've really grown to have a great friendship with Jay Wright. What an unbelievable, first of all, person he is. And then a basketball coach. Spent some good time. Mike Brown worked with me on a former when we coached the Pan Am team together. And just to be able to sit down with those guys and X and O, and not even just X and O, sometimes just talk about how to deal with, players or situations that come up and whether it's expectations, you think about what the Warriors go through, you think about what Villanova's going through, you think about Gonzaga goes through, or just things like that. Just a huge, I'm 55 now, but it was just total growth mode, man. It was just great. Just sharing stuff and growing, and there's so many really, really, really good people out there. It never ceases to amaze me.
That's really cool. Mark Few, my guest. One last thought. Let me go back to Maui for a minute. And not the tournament, not the Duke game, but the place itself. Every year, you and your family spend time in Maui. What are the visits like, and why is it so important to get back to Maui with your family?
I tell you, because it's just kind of you can look back on it as our, just looking at the pictures and all that, just the moments we shared all the way back when the kids were, basically infants. So that's kind of our sacred place to where we can get and just be a family and just kind of block everything out and shut everything down. That island to me has just a spirit about it, right? When you land and get off the plane, you can feel it. And we've just had some unbelievable family moments there, and then you've been able to watch over the years, and our family loves to get out and get after it, whether it's surfing or hiking or snorkeling or swimming. We're just outdoor types, so we're kind of always on the move, so it definitely suits us for that. But I think looking back, it's just that spirit, that kind of aloha spirit, and then just also just being able to just 24 hours a day, it's family stuff, and it comes at a time of year when I can kind of just get away from the whole basketball thing for a while.
Got to do it, Mark. I can't believe you're 20 years in there. 20 years in. Man, that's wild. Gonzaga's 8-0. They're number one in both polls, and they're at home against Washington. It goes without saying, Mark, I appreciate you. I appreciate the relationship, and it's always good to have you on this show, and I'm going to get with Janet during the break to find out exactly what's going on with the Christmas cards.
Those Christmas cards for your listeners are top notch. They are, there is none better than what the Romes put out. But hey, it's been great always talking to you over the years, and you always taking the time to talk about our program, and you're a good man.
Yeah, you too, Mark. And I appreciate you making time for us, too. Great to have you back, Mark. Thanks so much. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Mark Few, my guest. What an amazing coach he is. And what an amazing run, an amazing thing that he's built in Gonzaga. Never left. Never left. Never had to. Built the monster and is capable of achieving every dream he ever had, staying right where he was. And whereas back in the day, everybody was always on to the next thing, he didn't. And had so many opportunities to leave and never did. In terms of the Christmas cards, that essentially is Janet's thing. She doesn't want a Christmas present. She doesn't want a gift. She just wants the cards. And it's kind of a big production. So that's what he's talking about. Alvin goes, dude, kind of. It's a really big production. So what's on the Christmas card? I could post it on social, but I won't. It's just the kids. What makes that Christmas card unique, according to some, is they've got some bling. She attaches a little bit of bling to it. And the photography is pretty brilliant because the photographer is unbelievable. And Hawks says this. I don't know that this is true because I don't get involved. Hawks says the postage is $8. I don't know if that's true, Hawk. You might be embellishing a little bit. But the bling makes it pretty weighty. And it's the kids. I've only made one appearance in the Christmas card over the years, and that's when Ms. Direction won the first Breeders' Cup. And Janet put me in. We don't want to be in it. It's never us. It's just the boys. So I've never been, Janet's never been in a picture. And I've been in one. So that's what Mark Few is talking about. When we come back, phone lines are open. We talked about the big story this morning. Urban Meyer is going to step down after the Rose Bowl. What is your reaction? I want to get into Ryan Day and what he's stepping into. Have not gotten to last night's matchup. Normally, that's my lead on Tuesday morning. Haven't even gotten to that yet. And what a weird night that was for the Redskins. All that still ahead. With the weather getting colder, the struggle to get out of bed in the morning is real. My Casper mattress makes it so tempting to hide under the covers and stay cozy. I'm not going to lie to you. The struggle for me was real this morning. Hands down, the most comfortable mattress I have ever slept on. You see, once you try Casper, you're going to love yours as much as I love mine. Casper ships right to your front door for free in a small, how'd they do that, size box. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it. They'll refund you everything from its engineering to its packaging to letting you try it for 100 nights. It is no wonder Casper has over 35,000 five-star reviews. Of all their products across Casper, Google, and Amazon, sleeping on a mattress is the best way to try that mattress. Put Casper to the test in your own home for 100 nights, risk-free. Go to Casper.com and use the code name Rome. Get $50 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com, code name Rome. Get $50 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com, terms and conditions do apply.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You know, like I said, it's really unusual on a Tuesday morning for me not to lead with a take on Monday Night Football. Even more unusual to get almost halfway through the program without a take on Monday Night Football. And a number of you are waiting for it. This email reads, and again, my thanks to Mark Few and Gonzaga. This email reads, Dear Jim, losing Colt McCoy was unfortunate, but we're glad to have Mark Sanchez. We've already updated our playbook to incorporate some RBOs, run butt options. Sign the Redskins. Casey in New Hampshire, the RBO. Get it? The butt fumble? Dear Jim, last night wasn't so bad. At least my face didn't run up into somebody's ass. Sign Mark Sanchez. All right, anyway, in terms of the game, so Philadelphia does beat Washington last night 28-13. They win their second straight. They get back into the NFC Eastern race, and not a bad performance by Philly. Carson Wentz was rolling. He had that connection to Golden Tate working. Only a two-game winning streak, but starting to feel like the Eagles are getting back to being the Eagles. I mean, sort of, but looking up. Now, as good as that was for Philly, it was just flat-out weird for Washington. Jay Gruden's crew was playing with Colt McCoy after Alex Smith snapped his right leg. Then, this happened to Colt McCoy.
McCoy, able to escape, pops, and then goes down as charging up was Jenkins.
Colt McCoy just went back to the locker room. Washington is saying, it's a lower leg injury. I saw him when he got up and tried to backpedal, said to the training staff, I can't. That's when he headed back.
So, a nasty broken leg for Alex Smith, and now a nasty broken leg for Colt McCoy, which means Washington turned to Mark Sanchez, their backup's backup. If you're trying to win a division in December, the last thing you want to be doing is going with a guy who came in on a tryout a few days ago. But not all hope was lost. They still have Adrian Peterson. And Adrian Peterson, amazingly, still has this.
Sanchez in for the injured Colt McCoy. Adrian Peterson, the running back. He gives it to AP. Through a hole, 15, 20, to the 30. AP to the races, to the 50, to the 40, 30. Electrifying AP, 90 yards for a touchdown.
33 years old, and this dude is still torching suckers. I mean, everybody. Way to run to the ball, Philly. This guy's 33 years old. Running backs are supposed to be done at 30. And they sure as hell are not supposed to be breaking off 90-yard runs at 33. I never saw that coming. I don't think anybody else did either. As LeGarrette Blount tweeted, at Adrian Peterson, you are unreal. Benjamin Watson tweeted, left them 90s babies in the dust. But they say you too old, AD, too funny. It was unreal, and it was too funny. And it gave Washington a 10-7 lead and a glimmer of hope right when they had to have it. I mean, it looked all right at that point. When you have something like that happen as an offense, you got to be fired up by that. You see that, and you think to yourself, ground and pound, ground and pound. We're just going to feed the beast, right? Especially when you have to go to your backup's backup. Except that's not what Washington did. They didn't do that. Adrian Peterson had five touches. Five after that 90-yard run. Now, I said yesterday, I'm no Rod Marinelli. I'm going to say today, I'm no Sean McVay. But if I'm playing a quarterback who just walked in off the street, and my running back, my Hall of Fame running back, just had a 90-yard run, the longest of his entire career, I think I'm going to see if I can get this guy another run or two. Except that's not what the Redskins did. Peterson had five touches after that 90-yard burst. Five for the rest of the night. This guy had nine carries for 98 yards total. I'm not sure what's more impressive. A 90-yard TD when you're 33, or having a 90-yard TD and not getting 100 yards for the game. Again, this is with your backups backup in the game. I know Philly took the lead, so maybe you feel like you need to pass your way back into it. I know Washington has been snake-bitten with injuries this year, not just to their quarterbacks, but to their O-line as well, especially after Jonathan Cooper went down with that torn biceps. So maybe you're looking at Philly, and they're stacking the box, and they're forcing Sanchez to throw. But Sanchez throwing was not exactly working, and I love the kid. But he was 13 for 21 for 100 yards and a pick. He tried his best, but even Sanchez himself said, quote, it was a tall task. Yeah, that made it even taller by a coaching staff that had him throw it 21 times with the entire season on the line. I know Washington's banged up. I know Gruden might feel like he's running out of bodies. But those are the moments where the coaches need to pick the players up. Dig deep into the playbook, especially if you're an alleged genius like Gruden. Scheme something up so you can get your running game going and you're not relying on a third-string quarterback to save your season when he walked in off the street 5 minutes ago. But that's not what Gruden did. He just kept on chucking it. Kept on chucking. And it kept on failing. I get if he feels like he's out of options, but you got to do something or don't. Hey, look, you know me, I'll look at the bright side. Look at the bright side here. The bad news is your season might be going down the drain, but the positive is, the upside is, at least you're paying a quarter of a mil to a guy who you claimed after he was arrested for domestic violence for the second time this year. At least you're scratching that guy a quarter of $1 million worth of checks, considering he may or may not even play. So you got that going for you, which is nice, kind of. Man, give the ball to Adrian Peterson. How hard is that? He had a 90-yard run.
He's a man-child now.
He's a man-child now. And when his head starts bucking, you can cancel Christmas now.
Seth Peterson, I'll tell you, when he hits that daylight and you see that head start bucking, I mean, you can cancel Christmas.
The next two Christmases. He's a man-child now. He's an old man-child now. Child, please. He's 33. And he was running away from those suckas. Like he was in a car driving away from them. You think maybe you want to get that guy the ball?
Child, please.
Child, please. He had a 90-yard run and finished under 100 yards for the game. How is that possible? With the backup's backup under center. Come on now. I mean, I'd give anything to know what my man Scotty Farrell had to say about that play call. Anything.
I hope you're in your car listening to me right now, you fat ass. You are despicable. because you just let that happen to your star quarterback. And don't tell me you know more than me because you're some head coach. You're an idiot. You're a moron. No one, I don't care who you are, no one does that to a star player in the NFL except you, you loser.
Now, don't you tell him you know more than him. There isn't an NFL coach anywhere who knows more than my man, Scotty Farrell.
Fat ass.
Get him, Scotty. Love Scotty Farrell. Dear Jim, that telltale heart is a classic. But truthfully, I have never gotten too deep into Edgar Allan Poe. I am much more familiar with Edward James O. Yours, Shrapnel. Signed, Brett from Bugaha. Hey, Brett, that's why you're never going anywhere. It's why you'll never be anybody. You'll never go anywhere. Hey, Brett, are you seriously looking at me like, hey, Rome, is that good enough? Can I be on the podcast now? With an Edward James O reset. Brett, no. No, that's still not good enough. You'll never be good enough. He then tags it with, the podcast sounds good. My take feels good. I like my chances. Brett, never. As long as it's called the Jim Rome podcast, you will never be a part of that podcast. Because the podcast is premium content only. Content that you cannot get on this program. The best of the best. This show is 3 hours a day. That podcast is about 45 minutes a week. You can see whereby maybe you might slip through the cracks and get on the air here. It is 15 hours a week. The podcast, 45 minutes a week. You will never sniff that thing, Brett. Never. Ordinarily, I'd say, keep coming, man. Keep coming. What I'm going to say to you, Brett, quit. Stop trying. Quit. When the going gets tough, the tough quit. Brett, you should. You're never getting on that podcast. This email says, Herb to Auburn? Please. That ain't happening.
Please.
The last time Herb had to deal with Saban on the regular, he wound up faking a heart attack. Scott in Birmingham, hey, there may be something to that. Now, I'm not saying he faked the heart attack. I'm saying you're right. He may not want anything to do with Herb. I mean, it's one thing to end up in the Big Ten and have to deal with Jim Harbaugh. I mean, that's a joke, right? That's easy. That's easy. He looked at Harbaugh coming in there and said, damn, hell yeah, I got this. And he did. Michigan men, you may think this is a good day, and on some level it is, but whatever your guy does going forward, it's going to have a big, fat asterisk attached to it because he never beat Herb. No, Herb hit the Big Ten perfectly. He got there at just the perfect time. That conference was down. He came with a new energy. He started to go after it in recruiting. He helped build their image back up. But he hit that thing perfectly. The SEC is not down. The SEC doesn't have such an issue. Hey, look, maybe he's done. Maybe he's going to retire. Maybe his health is a thing. Maybe he wants to spend time with his family. Or maybe we've seen this movie before, and it's not a question of if, but a matter of when. And where? I'm not sold. When we come back, telephone calls. Hopefully good ones. On top of that, Josh Heupel next hour. Ryan Day. He's got some tough shoes to fill. Hey, in terms of Herb stepping down, you know, there's already odds right now that you can get on him coaching week one for the Browns next season. 6-1 odds. How about that? Think that those who lay down those odds think that he's going to spend time with his family or do what's best for his health? 6-1 that he'll coach week one for the Browns next season. All right, we're coming right back. First up, time for a sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
This segment's brought to you by Castrol Edge. If you need to be strong and stay strong, you want to be like Castrol Edge. The strongest full synthetic motor oil. It is 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. That according to the Kurt Orban test. Alvy, that was tight. It's almost like you knew I was going to say that. Castrol Edge, Kurt Orban. Not as tight. strong, Kurt Orban. Stronger under pressure, like my man Kurt Orban. If you're on hold, stay there. Or don't. The fact is, I'm not going to take a few of your phone calls. No names mentioned. Just know that. If you're on hold and your name is Josh in Detroit, there's a very good chance you're not going to see a light of day. No names mentioned, Josh. Oh. Anyway, Bills Mafia, I don't want you to think that I forgot about you because I didn't mention you yesterday. Because yesterday was jammed up. Because I have not forgotten about you. Even though you probably wish I had forgotten about you this time. You see, there's some things you cannot forget about. Some things you don't forget about. Some things that even if you want to, you cannot. And this entire season for the Bills has been pretty memorable, but for the wrong reasons, not in a good way. This entire season for the Bills has been really weird. Really weird. Now, normally I say weird is good. Not in this case. Not with the 2018 Bills. I mean, where do I start? Vontae Davis, mid-game retirement. Weird. Nate Peet's assault on the game of football. Weird. The torrential downpour of sex toys onto the field. Expected. A Derek Anderson sighting.
That's fine. That's fine.
This season is so weird, it's making mafia tailgates look and seem normal. As if lighting yourself on fire and jumping off of an RV through a folding table after beer bonging a cold one between somebody else's glutes is normal. But just when I thought that things could not get any more weird in Buffalo Sunday against the Dolphins, this happened. Now, you know things are straight up bizarre when Charles Clay is dropping Josh Allen's miracle game-winning Hail Mary. And I'm not even talking about that being the weirdest thing.
And the rookie, Josh Allen, with the game on the line. And there is the snap. Allen, back to throw. Pressure, dances away from it, now runs back to his right. Trying to buy some time under a heavy pass rush. Gets a block. Josh Allen throws it downfield. Headed for the end zone, and it is caught. No, incomplete in the end zone. Charles Clay trying to recover, trying to come back to the football. Could not drag it in. And the Dolphins will take over with 53 seconds left to play.
You know, I would say, boy, that was weird. That was bizarre. I mean, a miracle play by Josh Allen. A miracle play. But that's not even the strangest thing of the day. Now, what I'm talking about is Bills defensive end Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes getting caught on camera, getting after an official. Getting after an official in the tunnel who he accused in the video of calling him a bitch. Hold up now, Alvin. This is an NFL player alleging that a referee dropped a B-bomb on him. My man's hot. My man's hot. You called me a bitch. I'll catch you. Trust me, I'll catch you. I'll catch you guaranteed. I mean, listen to this guy. This guy is hot.
You call me a bitch, I'll catch you. Trust me, I'll catch you. I'll catch you guaranteed.
My man sounds angry. So that's what you can hear in the video as Jerry Hughes goes in on Roy Ellison, the referee, for allegedly calling him that. Now, what you can't hear on that video is Hughes walking away saying, quote, I'm going to knock his ass out when I see him again. I'm going to hurry up and get dressed. He called me a bitch. All right, so look, I wasn't there. I've been doing this a long, long time. I can count on exactly one finger the amount of times I've seen a video of a player run up on a ref like that and accuse a ref of something like that. Now, I'm not here to say what did or didn't happen because I was not on the field. So I don't know. I don't know what was said or what wasn't said. I don't know what happened or what didn't happen. I'm just saying, I've never seen anything like that before. And making the entire episode even more peculiar is Hughes denying that the confrontation that I just played even took place.
What caused the anger? I mean, obviously.
What's anger? Who was angry?
Yours.
I was angry?
That's the report, yes.
I mean, I lost the game, so I'm supposed to be angry. We just played our butts off for four quarters, and we came 6 inches short of winning the football game. So I think myself, with a lot of Buffalo Bills fans, are probably upset right now. I mean, That's just the nature of playing sports. Someone's going to win, someone's going to lose.
That's true, but we don't usually see those types of reactions, you know, going after an official after a game. What sparks that?
Who did?
Unique you.
I did.
Yeah.
I did what?
We saw you go up to the official.
What did I say? If I did go up to the official, what did I say?
I have video that shows you
okay.
saying
I would love to see
the
video.
Called him, you were referencing he called you.
Yeah, I would love to see the video.
So that did not happen that way?
I would love to see the video.
I mean, you were obviously about, you're saying that did not happen that
right.
way.
Right, and I said, I would love to see the video.
So show it to him. You'd love to see, he just said three times, I would love to see the video. All right, here it is. I mean, that was one of the stranger back and forths I've heard. Minutes earlier, Jerry Hughes was yelling at Roy Ellison, yelling on video in front of a bunch of people, and it was caught on video. Yelling on video. I'll catch you. I'll catch you. He called me a bitch. But then afterwards, when asked about that confrontation, he insinuated that it never even happened and that somebody should show him the video. I mean, show the man the video, right? He wants to see the video. Man, that's strange. Hey, look, I understand. He was mad. Nobody's saying you shouldn't be mad. Nobody's saying you should not be disappointed in the loss. But the question was, why did you run up on the official like that? And why were you so angry with that official? And did he or did he not call you a bitch? I mean, either way, the guy either didn't do it, but he did, because we saw the video, or in that heat of the moment, he was so hot that maybe he just blacked out and forgot. Or he's lying. Either way, it's weird. And we still have no clear answers as to exactly what happened on the field and what's going to happen to Jerry Hughes or the ref off the field. So, yesterday on the RPO, I had Ross Tucker filling in for Trevor Price. And I asked Ross, what's the craziest thing he ever heard a player? No, check that. The craziest thing a ref ever said to a player. Had he ever heard a referee that aggressive with a player? And Ross said, no, I have never seen or heard of anything like that.
I don't know that I've ever personally heard a ref say anything that egregious or that noteworthy. On the one hand, it's hard for me to believe. On the other hand, it's kind of a weird thing for Jerry Hughes to make up. I can't imagine what else would set him off to the point where he would go after the guy in the tunnel going into the locker room. If it was just a bad call, he wouldn't have done that. You know, he knows he's probably going to get fined and they're going to investigate the incident. It'll be really interesting to see what ends up coming out of that because I haven't heard it. I don't know that I've ever heard a ref say anything really derogatory to a player.
Ross, I wasn't there. I don't want to say. I have no way of knowing. It seems very peculiar that a ref would call a player a bitch.
It does. My only thought is maybe that's what Jerry thought he said. And it's not what the official said. I mean, you know, I would also just say, like, if you look at the profile of most of the officials, I don't picture many of those guys saying the word bitch that often. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're like accountants and lawyers. I mean, I don't know if he did say it. I wish that we had a mic because I'd be surprised the dude had it in him.
That's a great point, too. And I followed that up, and without giving away the podcast, I'm like, well, do you really think? I mean, look at Jerry Hughes, man. This guy's an alpha. Very hot, very aggressive. Do you really think that a referee, like some insurance executive, would say, hey, man, you're a bitch. What are you going to do about that? Yeah, that's what I thought, Hughes. That's what I thought. Back in the huddle. I don't know. I doubt it. I thought Ross made a really good point. Maybe that's what Hughes thought he heard. I don't know. I'm not there. Ross Tucker says, I've never really heard a referee say anything that aggressive or egregious, or anything at all. Most of these guys are like insurance executives, CEOs, because most of these guys would never even use the word, period. That was weird, really weird. I'm not saying what happened or what didn't happen. I wasn't there. Jerry Hughes himself is saying that he never confronted the official, when in fact we know he did, because there's video. In other words, weird, weird times in Buffalo. Four games left. It might be past time for the Mafia to take their act to Key Bank Center, where the Sabres play. Just leave your sex toys at home. Nobody wants to see them on the ice.
I'll catch you, guaranteed.
I'll catch you, guaranteed. Josh Heupel, next hour. telephone calls too. Stay tuned.